Hello and welcome to the No One Ever podcast. I'm Jamie Smith and joining me this week are Natalie James and Kevin to talk about the 2-1 defeat at home to Manchester City at the weekend. Natalie, we'll start with you. I suppose with so many people expecting us to lose heavily, 2-1 defeat, nothing to be sniffed at, but still felt a bit disappointing, weirdly.
Yeah, it did. It's quite a tough one to analyse, is that game, isn't it? I think, first and foremost, the minimum we asked for this week was a huge improvement in terms of commitment to the game and desire to win from following the West Brom game. And we certainly got that. Their overall play was much more improved. And it was very much like the Burnley we see at home this season, as opposed to the one that doesn't particularly travel very well. Saying that, on the flip side, we were undone by two incredibly sloppy goals where defence just switched off. And you just can't afford to gift sides like Manchester City goals like that. You're not going to get anything out of games in that league. So a frustrating one. You know, there's so many positives to take from the game, but there's also so many, you know, a few negatives as well. So, yeah, a bit frustrated. It's a hard one to assess, really.
Yeah, I felt like for a large proportion of the game, City were there for the taking. And I don't think we really made the most of that. Obviously, the defending for both goals was particularly terrible. And that's 6 goals in a week that we've just given to the opposition, which is obviously a concern. But yeah, massive improvement on the West Brom game. James, I've seen a lot of people arguing that Burnley deserved more than a defeat from the game. Do you agree with that? What do you make of the game overall?
It's one of those tough ones, isn't it? Because obviously the goals came from mistakes on our part rather than some great play from them. So I think it's hard to sometimes justify that you deserve more from the game when it's two clear mistakes from us that have, you know, allowed them to take the 3 points. But you know, you could make a strong case, I think, for us deserving at least a point out of it. I thought for large parts of the game we were maybe the better side as well, especially early on. But ultimately, it was those little lapses of concentration that came back and, you know, bit us, because you can't allow a player like Aguero chances around the 6-yard box because he's going to take them.
Yeah, the second one, it wasn't even a chance really, was it? It just sort of hit him and went in. But yeah, a player like Aguero, he probably makes his own luck in those sorts of situations.
My colleague, a City fan, had said to me in the week going up to it, he's like, he's got no form at the moment, he won't score. So obviously he was then going to score.
Yeah, probably a bit of that. He hadn't been in good form, actually. I think I'd pointed out on Twitter that George Boyd had scored twice in 2 games against Man City. Aguero hadn't scored against us, so it's probably a bit my fault that Boyd was terrible and Aguero scored 2 goals. So hands up, sorry about that. Kevin, with Tom Heaton missing through injury, there was probably a bit of concern over how Paul Robinson would do, but he did pretty well. 2 very good saves. Couldn't do much about either goal. I thought he was maybe a little bit slow to get down for the first, but overall proved that he's a capable deputy.
Yeah, I mean, when we saw the team sheet come out and you've got, you know, there was questions before the match over whether Aguero would be fit or not. And when he's fit and but Heaton isn't.
Yeah, it was like worst case scenario. Wasn't
yeah, it was Paul Robinson's first start in like 4 years or something, and his first Premier League game in 7 years. Yeah, and, you know, particularly coming up against, you know, a team like Man City, he certainly didn't embarrass himself. Yeah, he pulled out a few decent stops here and there, I believe. And you know, he had a role to play in the goal as well. You know, he was his long ball upfield, which you know, I'm sure he's not going to take all the credit for that assist. But you know, he got a good ball into the box and we ended up scoring from it. So you know, he's not gonna you know, go away.
Yeah,
thinking
I've seen a few people saying Paul Robinson's got 1 Premier League assist this season, the same as Paul Pogba. Makes you think, but I think it's probably a bit of a stretch to call an assist when someone headed it back to Di Maria. I don't think that can really count as an assist, but he is very accurate with those long kicks, and particularly towards the end of the game when we were very direct, it did give us a bit of an extra dimension. I'm not saying Robinson's going to play instead of Heaton, but it is something that he's got that Heaton probably doesn't. Natalie, we do have to talk about our goal, though. Sensational strike from Dean Marnie. He's probably been due on 7 years since he scored a Premier League goal, and we've seen him wind up those shots a lot of times for them to go dribbling wide, miles over the crossbar, over the stand.
Well said.
We caught it beautifully.
Yeah, we did. He did. And you know what? I'm really pleased for him. Every now and again, you get a goal like that and it makes the 100 screamers that he does from the rest of the season just all the worthwhile. And everybody was delighted. Marnie's one of those players. He's such a hero at Burnley. Everybody loves him. And to see him get on the goal sheet was really good. We actually had one of our listeners, Harry Tomlinson, who I was going to give a shout out today, actually. He tweeted just after that goal went in to say, Dean Marnie scored a screamer against City on my birthday and that's all that matters. And I think there were a couple of people who had birthdays on Saturday. I think Martin Biddulph as well had a birthday and they were all just saying that Dean Marnie's wonder strike into the back of the corner was the best birthday present they could have got. And why
birthday
not?
Shout out, it's on the Not Then Ever podcast, the new section.
I know.
Essentially, happy birthday if it was your birthday in the last week. But the flip.
20 quid ago. So everyone
yeah,
knows.
We do need to make some money. So yeah, you do need to pay for birthday chat outs in future. This was a one off special deal. The flip side of Marnie's performance, though, James, excellent goal, and he'd been playing very well, apart from a Marnie-ish tackle that he got a booking for, was that he went off injured, and so did Johan Gudmundsson, which made it very difficult for us with having to reshuffle twice just before half-time.
Yeah, very difficult. I think we're the sort of side that, at the best of times, don't really need injuries, let alone when you know we're having a good half against City. And, you know, particularly Dean Marnie this season, I think he's been resurgent. Obviously, injury problems for a couple of seasons. And he's really gone back to his best. And I think a lot of people thought that after injuries and whatnot, maybe we'd see him tailing off this year. And maybe someone would be looking to try and just keep on the bench. But he's been fantastic. And for a start, how often have you seen him keep a shot down from outside the box? So that was great to see. But I thought it was curious of... Maybe the sub then was the obvious one, bringing Arfield on. But I thought when Gudmundsson got injured, bringing Tarkowski on was a really interesting pick from Dash. I even saw Chris Borden, who I know is not the biggest Michael Carty fan in the world, saying he thought Michael Carty might have been the right choice there. And it did seem a bit odd not going for like for like. Obviously, we know Scott Arfield's played out wide quite a lot, but he does tend to come a bit narrower. And I'd felt like early on, part of our... You know, what was making us look good against City was the width we were using. So it was a bit of a strange choice. And I thought in the end, Tarkowski actually had a great game. I'm not sure he was necessarily still the right sub, but you weren't left thinking he wasn't the right sub because he'd had a shocker. I thought he actually acquitted himself pretty well considering the, you know, the players he was up against in the middle of the park.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I'm with you. I think Tarkowski was probably the wrong sub, but that doesn't mean... that he didn't play well. He did very well, particularly considering he's still playing that position, really playing in defensive midfield. One thing to point out, obviously, when you make two subs close together, you're not expecting to have to do that. Scott Arfield had come on to play central midfield, I think, and Dash decided to take the opportunity to put him out wide. You could sort of see the logic behind that, but I think bringing Tarkowski on for me was maybe a bit of an indication of Dash's cautious nature, a little bit defensive maybe, so it's an opportunity to put on another defender rather than go for it a bit more. And alright, he could have put Barnes or Gray on and asked them to play wide and we could have got battered. It might have happened, but I feel like City were there for the taking, as I've already said, and we didn't really take the opportunity to do that. Kev, we talk about subs quite a lot on the podcast, but do you think Dash got this one wrong, or do you think it was just a case of he didn't really have that many options considering the circumstances?
I mean, yeah, obviously we know that there aren't the options there. You know, the fact that we have got Tarkowski coming on to play
he must have wished that he had Joey Barton on the bench, dare I say. Barton obviously training with the club again.
Yeah, but, you know, we've got Tarkowski playing in midfield, who, you know, he's putting some good performances, but he's a centre back, and that really indicates the depth we've got. I mean, was it wrong? It's interesting to say, really, because at the end of the day, you know, we're playing one of the best teams in the world, and the only reason we've got beat is because of some calamitous defending in the box, which I'm not sure that comes down to the substitute. But on the flip side, if we had made a more proactive substitution, would we then gone on and got a goal ourselves? It's difficult to know. But yeah, I think that's a theme that's going to be really, really... It's been common for quite a while now, and I think we are going to need to strengthen that position in January, whether it's Barton, whether it's somebody else, I'm not sure. But Dyche didn't have too much he could have done. Even when, you know, we're talking about bringing Keightley on, you know, I know James is a big fan of Keightley, but he's not the answer in a Premier League game against Manchester City, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. As well as Tarkowski did as well, I think he was involved in the shambles for the second goal. He's one of the probably three or four players who missed a chance to clear the ball and didn't clear it. So if you're going to say how well he played, I think you've also got to point out that he was partly culpable for that second goal. I think the thing with putting Tarkowski on was that it meant when we did get towards the end of the game, we were just sort of hacking the ball up the field and using him almost as a surrogate target man. I don't think that's going to work against a team like Man City. They did look a little bit susceptible to the aerial barrage at times, but it's not much of a plan for me to just hack the ball up the field and hope it drops like it did for us in the Everton game where Arfield scored at the end. I think just because it happened once, we can't just expect it to be a ploy that's going to work. One thing that we've not mentioned yet, Natalie, even before Di Marni's early goal, was a strong penalty shout. I think former referee Mark Halsey has been shooting his mouth off on Twitter saying that it should have been a penalty. Nicolas Otamendi going through the back of Jeff Hendrick in the box. It looked like a fairly clear foul, but they were using all sorts of reasons to justify not giving it on the TV, saying that the sun was in the linesman's eyes and all this rubbish, but he was also possibly slightly offside.
Yeah, it's quite a hard one to see the offside, I think, in full speed during the game. I think it would be pretty eagle-eyed of the officials to be able to spot that, because even watching it on TV on a few of the replays, it's even now we're a bit like, oh, is he just offside? Yeah.
And
is
also,
he
you hardly ever see free kicks given for offside from free kicks.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so
it's,
much
you know,
other stuff
tough.
That people are looking out
for. Yeah, exactly.
It's really blatant.
No, I completely agree. There's a real inconsistency at the moment, and I think this is something that has to be addressed across the league. We're playing in what we're told is the best league in the world, is the richest league in the world, and has got the best players, the best clubs, and it's supposed to therefore have the elite officials as well. And you know, we see week in, week out, things happen every single week, but just this same week, you know, Leicester got an equaliser against Borough, which just didn't look anything like a penalty at all. And so you think, well, how has that been given a penalty and ours isn't? We've had shouts and not shouts this season. We've had that ridiculous game at Southampton where there were three penalties. One wasn't given, two were, the two that were weren't, and the one that wasn't was. And it's, there's just a consistency problem for me in this league, and it's something that just has to be addressed. We've seen them given, we've not seen them given, but I think, you know, if that goes in and then Marnie makes it 2-0, that's a huge couple of points for us. And again, we've talked on the podcast before about trying to stop being conspiracy theorists and not trying to subscribe to the woe is us attitude. But there is absolutely, whether it's just a subconscious one or whether it's a deliberate, but there is definitely a bias towards a bigger size in this division. And I wonder whether or not that penalty would have been given if it had been on a City player. I really do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't like this little old Burnley never get decisions thing, but in the face of the evidence that we've had this season, it does look that way. It was quite interesting watching the Arsenal-Bournemouth game on Sunday. Bournemouth got a penalty that I don't think a bigger club would have got. I don't think another small... I don't think we would have got, even if I'm going to get that the right way around. It was a penalty, but I was a bit surprised that they got it at a big club, is what I'm trying to say. So maybe a sign there that some refs at least are happy to give decisions for the smaller clubs. Another thing I wanted to bring up, James, choice of captaincy. For me, it was slightly surprising that Ben Mee got the armband. Do you think he was the obvious choice? I know we talked about captaincy right at the start of the season, I think, but I thought maybe Di Marni was the obvious pick.
Oh, you stole the words right out of my mouth, Jamie, because I was going to say, yeah, it was a curious one, and I thought, yeah, Di Marni maybe, just on sort of experience level, and, you know, he's obviously a great competitor, so you'd think that maybe his face fits if you're talking about someone just to step in for one game. But then again, you know, I think Ben Mee does sort of lead by example, doesn't he? Puts his body on the line every game. You know, you've seen him make some blocks that I think it's very rare players these days, you know, make. So maybe there is, you know, a good leadership element to him there.
What about you, Kev? Do you think Mia's captain was fine? He did a reasonably good job, although he was involved in the mix-up, shall we say, euphemistically, for the second goal.
Yeah, I mean, wrong. I think Mee was one of the names that was put in the mix in the summer when we were sort of the other summer when we were talking about who was going to be captain before Heaton got it. I think he was captain at Manchester City's youth team or reserve team, whatever it was. And you know, I think he's quite a strong character. I think you know, there's arguments that, I mean, for Di Marni, I think particularly with him, you know, Ben Mee playing against his former team as well, maybe that had something to do with it. It's one game. It's like when it comes to these one game things as well, it's largely ceremonial. It could very well have been sticking a lot of names in a hat, pulling out, seeing what comes out. The club captaincy is much more important than the match day captaincy. But yeah, I don't think there's any surprise for me for Ben Mee. I think I'm right in saying Ben Mee's had it in a couple of friendly games before as well. So I it was expected.
Fair enough. I had it in my head that Di Marni was vice captain, but that might not even be a thing. But yeah, I'm sure he'll be captain when he's fit again, which hopefully will be sooner rather than later. Now in the second half, I felt Burnley were too direct. I know we are quite a direct team, but there was a lot of long ball, and I think even looking back at the highlights, there was one chance that was a hoof into the box that was a knockdown, and then Barnes' overhead kick right at the end. We didn't really create anything.
No, we didn't. And I did feel like it was almost like we were trying to consolidate a 2-1 loss, which was an odd thing to do.
At least it was only 2-1.
Yeah, exactly. We do like that as a positive outtake from a game. I do wonder whether, I'm sure this is probably not groundbreaking analysis, but we must just be playing this direct ball because we don't have the creative options on the wing. Goodmunson had gone off, and he's probably our only creative winger at the moment. Arfield and Boyd just don't really create any flair when they're on the wing like we ask them to. And we know it's been a problem since God knows the last transfer window I can think of, that we are sadly missing in that squad a very good winger who can cross a ball well and create some chances. We don't have the crosses coming in from the wing from right back like we had when we had Trippier. And the team's just now set up differently. So we're just making the best of what we've got. And we are doing it very well. You know, and it's not getting a lot of negative press. There's a lot of people in the press are saying, look, this is how Burnley set up to play. That's what they do. And they do it very well. And sometimes we hear Dyche talking about having to find different ways of winning. And at the moment in the Premier League, to counteract some very, very good sides, we're having to find a way that suits the personnel we've got on the pitch. And if that's all we've got, then that's fine. It's not pretty to watch. We won't create an awful lot. I do worry that in those kind of situations, we have to create maybe 10 or 12 half chances just to try and score one. But you know what? It's all we've got at the moment. So we've just got to carry on doing it well until we can change that.
Yeah, I think the wingers were a problem at the weekend, I think. I was looking at the stats and George Boyd touched the ball 22 times in the 90 minutes, which is pathetic. It's honestly pathetic.
He didn't look like he was doing anything either. He was just, so you could see
him. He did his miles, but it's just nothing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, he was just running, but it wasn't effective running. It was just covering distance.
Yeah.
Please don't sit on the fence about how you feel.
Huh?
Please don't sit on the fence about how you feel.
There's no point, is there? I mean, like, it's not a new thing that George Boyd isn't doing anything. Like, he runs up and down the wing, that's all he does. And I've pointed this out on Twitter and someone said you can't judge him on how often he's touched the ball. It's like, well, he's meant to be an attacker, he's meant to create. You can't just run 10 miles. Like, that can't be.
I've done my 10 miles, I've done my bit.
Like, yeah.
You know, he is still listed on the Burnley website as a striker. When you go into the squad list of the first team, it is George Boyd striker. And I just can't.
It is what he does with the ball as well, isn't it? That I think we all expected maybe a little bit more creativity from him. And,
You know, we've seen when he does get the ball in his feet, he just tends to knock it ahead of him and run after it. And it reminds me, I don't want to admit the classic Burnley runner comparison, but it reminds me a little bit of Ian Moore.
that's not positive at all.
You know, the like, same thing. He takes a long touch, runs after it, and you sort of, you want a little bit more. And I know obviously many people aren't fans of him, but Michael Cartley does at least try and take a man on.
You got shares in Michael Cartley.
The yeah. crusade this season's relentless.
The Michael Cartley Appreciation Society.
And, you know, it's similar. I obviously did not rate Junior Stanislas, but I'm going to give a little bit of credit to Junior Stanislas. He tries to take a man on. And I think we just need someone who's going to try and take a man on.
I think it would help. I think I said before that I've got some sympathy for our wide players because they do have to do a lot of running and they do have to press the opposition hard and they are quite deep a lot of the time. So it's difficult to do all that defensive work and then also be a creative threat. But there's just nothing from Boyd on the ball at all. And it's like playing with 10 men creatively. You try and attack and you've got, what would you say, in the formation we've been playing, three attackers, you'd say, one striker, two wingers. And when one of the wingers is doing nothing, then you're basically a man down. And I think we just need to find a way to get more out of the wide players. Because Goodmanson's done a good job this season, but it looks like he's going to be out for probably 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It'll look like hamstring pull. So we certainly need to find another way to get the ball.
I think I've got the impression that Dyche almost is not really sure what to do out wide with the non-Goodmanson player. Obviously, we tried to bring a winger in the summer and it's almost like I think either Arfield and Boyd both have been quite ineffective all season, really, out wide. And Goodmanson.
And they do the same thing, don't they? So when you've got them both.
It's almost like I'm not sure. You know, Goodmanson's obviously been he's been fantastic out wide, but I'm not sure we've really known what to do on the other side. And whatever option we've used just hasn't worked at all. And I think it was an interesting point what Brom has said about playing it wide, playing it up long, because we haven't got that the option, the creativity. And I think, you know, particularly when we've got Sam Vokes up front by himself, it's really difficult to create something through the middle. You know, it's not like if you've got the likes of Andre Gray, you know, you could try to play through the middle and, you know, play the through ball 10 times and 9 times it might be offside, but then at one time, you know, like we saw at Bolton last season, he was offside about 1,000 times, but then the one time he was onside, he went through and scored. And that's what you can do when you've got a player like Andre Gray who's got that pace. You can play through a middle a lot more, but when you've got Sam Vokes, you really need to build the ball forward. With Sam Vokes, he's not someone you can play a ball and he's going to run onto it. You need to build the ball forward as a team. And when you've not got that creativity out wide, it's very difficult to do that. So I think it's a really interesting point, Matt. And it'd be really interesting to see what happens in the summer. In January. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, I hope we do something in January rather than waiting for the summer. Yeah, I think the point about Vokes is valid. We've done very well out of feeding Vokes when it's a targeted ball into Vokes, maybe a 30, 40-yard pass, looking for his chest where he can bring it down, players can get around him. But on Saturday in the second half, I think it was more 60, 70-yard passes that was pretty much just hoof it up the pitch and hope he can get on the end of it. Also, we haven't even mentioned him on the podcast apart from in the penalty incident, which is maybe indicative of the low profile he's got at the moment. But I don't think Jeff Hendrick, for the sort of advanced midfield role, is working particularly well. He doesn't seem to know really what he's doing when he's back to goal. He seems to want to go forward and he's ahead of the play a bit too much for me. So maybe Marnie being injured would allow us to go back to 4-4-2. Possibly, Natalie, do you think that's an option? There's also Andre Gray to think about. He's not gotten the pitch for the last two games with Barnes preferred.
Well, I think it's quite obvious that there's something not quite right with Andre at the moment, whether it's match fitness or whether it's a mental problem. But obviously, he's being left out of the side for a reason. I don't think that's particularly controversial to say that. I think it's quite apparent to
not
everybody.
Not the last two games, two of the last three.
Exactly.
He came on a West.
Exactly. He brought him straight back on for his first game after the ban, didn't he? So, and then he's just dropped him again. So obviously, there's something not quite right there. We're not privy to that information, so we can only assume at the moment that he's not available for selection. So I would really like to see Ashley starting, providing he's got the legs in there. And if that means us going back to a 4-4-2, then that's absolutely fine. I'm nervous about doing that just because our best results and our best run this season have come from that 4-5-1. But we have to, we're going away on Saturday to an away game, and we are in a really bad away day problem at the moment, which we need to sort out. We've gone 4-5-1 away from home, and it's just not worked. We've tried 4-4-2 at the start of the season. It's just not worked. So I think, assuming that Gudmundsson's out, I think we have to. I think, obviously, we've not got the personnel for the 4-5-1. So I think we can't really go away to Stoke and just play for a 0-0 draw. It's that's a, just a ridiculous strategy. So I would like to see us go back to 4-4-2 and start Ashley. I think he's got a lot to prove, and he looks hungry, and he looks like just causing a nuisance. So that would be my vote.
Yeah, I think Barnes to come in is a decent selection. I think the problem with Barnes and Volks as a pair is that they're a bit samey for me. I know Barnes has got a bit more physical edge. He likes to battle with the defenders a bit more. He's probably a bit quicker. But I don't think he's not going to stretch teams like Gray would. I would quite like to see Barnes wide in the 4-5-1, actually, particularly if Gudmundsson was fit. But if he's not, then it allows us to have a runner on one side and someone who's at least got a goal threat on the other side. So
I did hear that said. Maybe,
another option.
When we brought Tarkowski on, maybe we should have brought Barnes on and played him wide.
Yeah, I mean, I thought like Tarkowski wouldn't have been in my thinking at all. But yeah, as I've already said, it must have been very difficult. You've had to make one change in midfield already. Then you've got another one. Gudmundsson couldn't even try and play on like Marnie did, so there was no couple of minutes where you could think about it. It's just you've got to make a decision straight away. But I think Barnes out wide would have been a more positive change. Might have been the same result. We could have lost anyway, but yeah, I think Barnes out wide would have probably been my pick in that situation. Do you think Barnes coming in and back to 4-4-2 is a strong option for next Saturday, James, at Stoke?
I mean, potentially. The only thing with Barnes is I'd like to see him just not give away so many weird fouls. It reminds me a bit of, you remember Gareth Taylor? I think at one point I'd like, was the top scorer in the Championship and also the top offender for giving away fouls, just for backing in. And as much as I like seeing Barnes' competitive side, I'm just not sure 90 minutes of him giving away fouls for backing in it is going to be helpful to the game. Not sure if it maybe breaks it up a little bit too much. It's really difficult. I feel like he has an impact as a sub, whereas I'm not sure that Gray necessarily has the same impact. I think Gray is someone who likes to settle into the game a little bit more. So personally, I'd rather see Gray come back into the side, and then when Volks tires, bring Barnes on, because I think the last couple of games, in fact, particularly on Saturday, I thought Volks was really struggling towards the end. You know, he put a lot of running in during the game, and you could see that every effort to close someone down was a real struggle for him. Obviously, I think on another day, Dash would have probably brought Gray on at that point, but he's already had the two injury subs, so he's playing, you know, with a shortened hand as to what he can do. But I think that'd be the way to go for me, because I feel that Volks and Barnes are maybe a more either-or choice than Gray and Barnes or Gray and Volks, because Gray's a completely different player to the pair of them.
Yeah, I think for Gray, obviously, it's the season's not gone anything like how we would have hoped or expected. The ban will have had an impact, even if it's just on fitness, keeping him away for a few weeks. But the best thing for strikers is always playing and scoring goals, and if you keep the lad on the bench, he's not going to get any better. So at some point, we're going to have to play him. We paid a lot of money for him. He's scored a lot of goals. So we're just going to have faith, I think, that Gray can, whatever's going on in his head, he can just put it right on the football pitch. And I'm sure Burnley fans will all love to get behind him. We want to see him scoring goals as soon as possible. One player who has been criticised, touched on just then, Kev, is Hendrick. Again, a player we spent a lot of money on, £10 million. Not like a £10 million player, to be fair, but it seems to me like a lot of the criticism is based on value, which I think is a bit unfair, because Jeff Hendrick didn't decide he was worth £10 million.
No, and I think it's one of those, it's, you're looking around the market, there's not many, you know, the like, there's not many Joey Bartons about, where we got obviously him for on a free transfer in the promotion season. And I think, you know, you look at some players, you'll get a great deal on them, and then some players that seem like a bit more, but that's just how the market works, and we've got him for what. I'm not sure what it is with him. He's not being massively poor, but he doesn't seem to be making a big impact on games either. I'm not sure if he's. I've not studied him, but I've not watched him too much to. I'm not sure if he's like David Jones in that a lot of what he does goes unnoticed. Obviously, Jones got a lot of stick from Burnley fans and for not having a big enough impact on games at the time, not being positive enough, passing back. I'm not sure. Obviously, Hendrick's a different player, but I'm not sure if it's the similar situation that he's doing stuff. It just doesn't stand out the same way with the likes of Goodmanson or Defoe. I'm not sure, but when you start to look at, I don't think what essentially once the transfer was done, I think the value's irrelevant. We're talking about again with Andre Gray, we paid a lot of money for him. As soon as that transfer's done, I don't think what you paid for him is any relevance at all. It doesn't matter whether he's Hendrick, who's come in for 10 million, or is Aidan O'Neill, who's come through the youth system, is probably on, you know, peanuts in wages as well. That's not really important to me. The importance is what they've done on the pitch at the time. Hopefully, you know, we'll start to see a lot more from him.
I think the Jones comparison is an interesting one. There was one game, a couple of games ago, I can't remember which one it was, but said a few comments saying that he'd had a quiet game. So I was looking at the stats again. Sorry to keep going on about his stats. I know some people find stats really boring. But his pass completion was like 95%, which is fantastic. But it does indicate to me that maybe he's a bit too safe in possession. And if he's going to be the most advanced of the central three, he probably needs to be a bit more incisive, a bit braver on the ball rather than just keeping it. I'd always rather someone keeps the ball rather than gives it away, but at some point you have to be a bit more, just try and play a dangerous pass that's going to open someone up rather than a sideways ball that's not going to really get you any further up the pitch. I think he needs to be a bit more forceful in challenges as well. He seems hanging back a bit. I feel sorry for him in a way, because he's played like half a dozen Premier League games. He's playing at a new level. He's playing in a system that might be a bit unfamiliar to him. He's getting used to all his colleagues, so I think it's just, he needs a bit more time, I think. I think people have been a little bit harsh on him.
I think he's kind of playing sort of stuck between two roles though as well, isn't he? I think that kind of skews it a bit. He's maybe not clear on what exactly his position is.
A lot of people say, I don't see what he does, but I don't see what we're asking him to do. I don't understand his role, so I don't know how Hendrick's meant to understand his role.
Because at times it looks like he's playing almost with Volks, and then at times he's filling the gap between the two central midfielders and Volks. It's like, is he there to scoop up second balls? Because it looks a little bit like that at times as well, that, you know, if Volks doesn't take it down, Hendrick is there to pick up the scraps. And it just feels a bit disjointed with sort of what he's looking to do. And I mean, it doesn't help that he's had a couple of chances to score now, and he's not taking them. Obviously, particularly West Brom, it was a chance he probably should have taken. And I think that sort of affects his confidence level. And you know, and then obviously on Saturday when he doesn't get that penalty early on, maybe that affects him as well. And he thinks, is anything going to go my way at this, you know?
Yeah, I think it's definitely partly confidence. And I'm sure if he scored a goal, that would probably help him. The penalty incident is a really good point, actually, because one of the things that I've seen people pull him up for is that he's too weak and he gets bumped off the ball too easily. He got bumped off the ball and it should have been a penalty, so like, can't really have it both ways. Maybe he's just the sort of player who's unshowy and a lot of his best work does go unnoticed, like Kev says. I'm sure we will see a bit more from him as the season goes on, but Marnie's injury is an opportunity to have a bit of a reshuffle, maybe, so maybe it will be two in midfield for the weekend. We'll preview Stoke in a bit more detail next, but before then, it's everyone's highlights of the podcast, the only reason people listen. It's Tweet of the Week, so over to Natalie.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week.
Indeed. And I have to say, I think it's the main reason why I keep asking you to let me do it, because otherwise I think I'd get sacked from the podcast. So,
well, there have been two of you sacked this week for lateness.
I know, we've been very bad this week. But yes, definitely my highlight of the week. Some weeks more challenging than others when we troll through your social media posts at the end of the game or at a big event and try and pick what was our highlight. Lots to choose from this week, but the winner went to Ian Montgomery. who summed up how we were all feeling after that game pretty well. And he says, stop a few sloppy defensive errors and add a little creative spark, and it could be good this year. Not sure how I feel now. I do agree with Ian there. It does feel like we are so very, very close to being a side that can stay up and compete in this division. We just need a few tweaks and get rid of, like we said before, these unforced errors. So that was my tweet of the week. Well done, Ian.
Yeah, I don't think we're far away at all. And we were ninth in the league 2 games ago, so I don't think anyone's panicking. But Saturday did feel a bit like 2 years ago for me, in that we played pretty well and like the spirit and character was really good and we battled really hard and it was brave Burnley, but we got beat. It just felt like so many games 2 years ago where we'd done everything right technically and then just managed to lose. Let's look ahead to the Stoke game then. They've turned their form around after a terrible start to the season. 1-0 winners at Watford at the weekend. Very good result for them. Watford have been going well. Difficult place to go, James, but our record there isn't too bad, is it? We've won a couple there recently.
Yeah, I remember last Premier League season, Michael Carty had a really good game at Stoke, and we won.
Is this a bet? Have you got a bet on? How many times can you mention Michael? I'll give you 10p every time you mention Michael Carty on the podcast. Is that what's going on?
That just happened to smoothly come into being. They're a tough team to take. They're an interesting side as well, aren't they? Because when they were previously staying up under Tony Pulis, they had a, you know, real identity about them, and they've managed to reinvent themselves, which is pretty unusual for a mid-table Premier League side. So, you know, I think full credit to them for doing that. It's going to be a tough game, and you know, with the way we've been playing on the road, it's going to be difficult to see how we're going to, you know, fix that in a game against a side like Stoke. But I think we've got to find a way, obviously, to get something on the road. And I think there's worse teams to play if you're looking for something. And, you know, I think we need to play the way we did at home on Saturday. And if we do that, we should at least get a point out of it, I think.
Yeah, it must just be a mentality thing, because it's not like when we're at home and play really well, it's not like we're playing like a home team. We often play like an away team and try and play on the break and hurt teams that way. So there's no reason why that wouldn't work away for a moment. It seems a bit strange that we've been so poor on the road. Kevin, although Stoke have put a few results together, they are just a middling Premier League team, really. There shouldn't really be anything for us to fear from going there.
There shouldn't be, but like we said, you know, I think
we lost 4-0 at West Brom, so.
Yeah, I think when we play away from home, we fear everything. We even lost to Accrington away from home, so yeah, it's one of those games where,
wow, thanks for reminding us about that.
Yeah, it's strange, but it's like you look at this game, you think, you know, we should be looking to win this, but actually I'm going into it thinking, do you know what? I just want us to give a good account of ourselves. And that's not what we should be thinking. I think that's a sign of how poor we've been, is that I'm just wanting us to give a good account of ourselves. Maybe, you know, if we could get a draw, that'd be fantastic. But I think that's not the mentality we should be having looking good in this game. And I hope that's not bleeding through to the team as well. I hope they're not going there thinking, you know, let's, you know, give a good account of ourselves. Let's do better than we did at West Brom. I hope they're going to win. I really hope that's what's happening. But that's not how I'm feeling. I wish I was.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the sort of game, isn't it, Natalie, where most Burnley fans would take a draw if it was offered now.
Yeah. Would we say that? The instinct, as soon as you said that question, then was me to say, yes, I would take a point, because I think any point that you can get away from home is a bonus point in this league and is really vital. And we aren't going to get... Sorry. However, we aren't going to get enough points from home to get us to survive this season. We're just not going to do. So at some point, we have to break this curse and we have to start picking up 3 points away from home. Otherwise, it's going to be a long old slog and we're very much going to be dragged into that relegation fight. We're only just above it by, 3 points at the moment. So whilst the answer to that, the instinct is probably to say, yes, we'd take a point. Actually, I really feel like this is a massive chance for us to get 3 points, and I think this would really put our season back on track if we could. So I'm with Kevin. I really hope they go out there to try and win. For me, I think it's an essential 3 points at an inconsistent Stoke side that have struggled so far.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to expect from Stoke, so hopefully they'll have a bad day and we'll have a good day, and that would suit us quite nicely. Let's round off, as always, with predictions then. Kevin, you can go first. Give us a prediction for Stoke v Burnley on Saturday at 3 o'clock at whatever they're calling their stadium.
My honest prediction is that if it's an actual prediction, I honestly think we're probably going to get beat. I'm going to go 2-0, but I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to go optimistic and say there's going to be zero goals. It's going to be a horrible match. It's going to be horrendous. Everybody's going to be like just checking their phones halfway through because it's so boring, nothing's happening, and we're going to get a zero-zero draw. What's it called? Nil-nil. Nil-nil draw.
A 0-0. Brilliant. If you'd just like to give us one prediction, James, rather than multiple, that'd be good.
We're going to win 3-0. It's not going to be an Andre Gray hat trick, but it is going to be a Michael Carty hat trick of assists.
Hat trick of assists, brilliant. You probably couldn't predict an Andre Gray hat trick since you predicted an Andre Gray double hat trick and you didn't even have the pitch.
Andre Gray may get one of them, though, I think.
For the City games, though.
But maybe now that he's not predicted the Andre Gray hat trick, maybe it will actually happen.
There you go. That is how predictions work. Isn't that right,
it
Natalie?
It certainly is. Listeners, drum roll, it's back. The new wave of positive, we're Burnley going to win 3-0, has not been working. The new turnstile has been letting us down, so we are bringing back reverse psychology.
Boom.
I've got a really bad feeling about Saturday. I think Stoke... I don't hate it. It works. I think Stoke are going to prove to be far too difficult a game for us. I think we're going to struggle. I don't see how we're going to break this away day. Who do we've got? And I fear that Burnley are going to lose 4-0.
Again, excellent. That's about 4-0 defeats. So on that bombshell, we'll end this week's podcast. Thanks to Natalie, James and Kevin for joining me. Thanks to Rick, who provides our artwork, which you can see via social media or on the website. No, no, never. .net, where you can access all our old podcasts as well, should you wish to go back and listen to any of them. Don't know why you'd want to do that. You can get in touch with us as well. Email address, as always, podcast@nonainever.net. And also tweet us, nonainevernet. And we are still seeking sponsorship, so if your company is interested, please get in touch and we'll let you know how to go about that. But that's it for this week. I've been Jamie Smith. We'll be back next week. Goodbye.
And yeah, that's why I'm going to edit myself out, because I've got nothing to say after that.
Sounded like you were going to say something really profound then. You had me hooked. It's such a disappointment, Kevin.
Yeah, just not.
Yeah, you don't know me at all, do you, Natalie?